Hello, and thank you for joining this MedCast presentation titled Embracing Research and Finding Support to Manage Type 1 Diabetes. I am Diana Isaacs, an endocrine clinical pharmacy specialist and the Continuous Glucose Monitoring Program Coordinator at the Cleveland Clinic Diabetes Center in Cleveland, Ohio.
And I am Natalie Bellini. I'm a nurse practitioner specializing in diabetes management with the R&B Medical Group in Williamsville, New York.
And joining us today is Sumita Singh, whose daughter Bela was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 13 in 2020 and is currently enrolled in a clinical trial for a type 1 diabetes therapy. Today, we will discuss their family's journey as they navigated the challenges of Bela's diagnosis and embraced research to find a treatment for type 1 diabetes. We are so excited to have her with us today. Thank you so much for joining us today. Let's go ahead and begin. Can you tell us a little bit about Bela, and do you have a family history of type 1 diabetes?
We don't have any history of family diabetes. Bela is now 15. She was diagnosed when she was 13, so it's been an interesting 2 years for us. But she's a pretty cool kid. She's now a sophomore in high school. She goes to a fairly competitive, I guess we call them magnet high schools in the county that I live in, and has chosen to pursue law and justice because she's all about community and giving back, and somehow likes space and science. So if there is a role for space and science and law, Bela's probably right in the middle of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow, what an incredible child. So can you talk to us a little bit about her journey in getting diagnosed with type 1? What happened? Were you aware of the signs? Did you know anything at all? Tell us your story.
It's a great question, and it's a tough one to answer because I wish I had known, like a lot of parents and maybe doctors and caregivers. My husband and I both have advanced degrees. We, work and understand what's happening latest in science. At the time when Bela was diagnosed, I worked for one of the world's largest scientific publishers. So I have a lot of regret that I did not, know early enough. And the reason is, there's no education on type 1 diabetes. It's not something that pediatricians talk about, and I wish they did. So our journey began in the fall of 2019. Sorry, in the fall of 2019. There's a lot that's happened in the last 2 years. Bela was in eighth grade. She had all the symptoms. Now that I look back, like she was a poster child of a kid going through the symptoms of diabetes. She frequent urination, dehydration, losing weight. I was making her, 4 or 5 meals. I was constantly feeding her, but she was not keeping up. It was in January of 2020. She actually fell asleep in her science class. That's what happened. And she didn't fall asleep. She had no energy. And there were all these, foot cramps. Once she had a cramp on a driveway and my younger daughter went to get her. So we had all the signs, and then when she fell asleep or basically had tremendous fatigue in her science class, her science teacher, believe it or not, called the nurse. The nurse called us, and we scrambled. And between that day and the day she was admitted in pediatric ICU, it was about 5 days. Less than that, a rapid response from us. I will point out one thing. We have a family history of hypothyroidism. So I have it, my sister, my mother. There is a Hashimoto's. So there's an autoimmune tendency, if you like. And particularly in my demographic, in the South Asian community, there's a tendency to have these kinds of autoimmune conditions. So Bela had an endocrinologist. She had an endocrinologist since she was in fifth grade. And I think what's makes me a little bit angry and sad at the same time is we went to see the endo on January 13th. And we mentioned all these symptoms about the weight loss and such. And, I wish she had done a run type 1 test. I wish she did an A1C, and maybe we could have been in the hospital 3 or 4 weeks before Bela didn't have to faint in class.
Wow. That's really intense. Yeah. And I'm curious how, once you knew that she had type 1 diabetes, then how did you communicate that to Bela? How did you kind of, what did you tell her?
So what is the data? You know, majority of pediatric patients who get diagnosed with type 1 diabetes typically end up getting diagnosed because they are in distress, right? So Bela was already in distress. She had all the symptoms. I tell the story. Sometimes we talk about it. Now we're in a different place as a family. But when my husband was out taking her for blood work, so we had blood work from both the pediatrician and the endo. And I was in bed with my younger daughter and the dog. And I got a call from the endo saying, hey, we've got the results. You should go to the pediatric ICU in the nearby hospital and pack a bag. And she still didn't tell me what was going on. So this was in COVID, only one parent could be in the hospital. We brought, you know, obviously I met my husband, he stayed in the car, I went to the hospital, he was on FaceTime. It was, we learned together at the same time. I did not have the opportunity to onboard, if you like, my daughter, as I would have liked to. So we coped with it. I stayed overnight in the hospital and she was in bed and I just stayed up the whole night researching. So my job was, I went in from, we have a problem to now we need to solve it. We're a fix it kind of family. And immediately we found all these, you know, friends and, you know, people within our network who either had type one or knew someone who had type one, and just the community sort of emerged. Within 2 days, we had researched what kind of pump we wanted, what CGM we wanted. I didn't get the opportunity to onboard her and talk to her. We did that when we got home.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. I'm just thinking, I mean, you're really like to do all that. A lot of parents would, you know, just have no idea about pumps and CGM.
So then what? So what happened? How were you approached about research opportunities, or did you find those as well? It sounds like you did so much of your own research.
We found it. So, like I said, at that time, right before Bela's diagnosis, I worked for a published scientific. It was in my, if you like, in my context and clinicaltrials.gov, I was aware of that. And I think, you know, I look back and, you know, I'm not sure what triggered me. I think my work experience and just being a problem solver, and both my husband and I. And I think by day three, actually, a lot of parents asked, we were told when their child is diagnosed, hey, what about the research and what about a cure? And of course, we asked all those questions. We asked about stem cell research and stuff and such. But it was really important for us to do two things. One is to participate in the science associated with whether it's life improvement for a child or cure or anything along that spectrum. We want to be part of that journey. We want to bring Bela into this experience with science on her side. That was really important to us, you know, not take a victim mentality. I actually, second night, my husband and I, we were both on clinicaltrials.gov looking at what's the cutting edge research. There were two trials, in fact, that I had reached out to. There was one at Yale for a blood pressure drug you might have heard of, and looking at whether or not that could be applied for early onset type 1 diabetes. And then there was teplizumab. And we applied to both. We actually missed the window for the study at Yale by a week. And we barely made the window for teplizumab. It was, if I tell you how we got in the trial, and someone could make a movie, it was kind of funny if I look back that process.
So tell us, go ahead.
I was going to say, what was it like? I mean, yeah, getting involved in a clinical trial, like whatever you can tell us about the experience, kind of any hesitations, were you nervous at all? Was she nervous at all?
Oh, absolutely. We haven't done clinical trials as a family. We knew the idea of what this is about, and we understood their double blind studies, and we didn't want to be in a phase one. We wanted to largely be in a phase three. So, and those were some of our considerations, but it was nerve wracking, to be honest with you, because you're walking into something you have no context. And it's a clinical research, you know, there are downsides and risks associated with that. So, you know, we studied all of that. We did talk about that. In fact, Bill is very close to both sides. You know, my both grandparents, my parents, and my husband's father, his mother passed away a while ago. And we brought the whole family together. So brunch, we all got together and we talked about the trial, and we didn't influence anyone. And, you know, my parents were asking me questions and Bila was asking me questions. And I mean, we all sort of collectively as a family came to the conclusion that I think our sort of the end of that discussion was, even if there is a 1% chance that you can benefit, we want to take the chance. You know, it's sort of, you know, we're a soccer playing family, so every shot at goal missed is a shot you don't get. So we were going to take all the shots at goal. But the process, the journey was actually pretty pretty interesting. So I, if you'd like, I can go through that.
Sure.
We would love it. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think some of the feedback that we've gotten is, who takes all that time off? Who would do this? And I think both Diana and I as clinicians have had this conversation and said, well, we would find a way, right? So tell us about finding a way to do this and set your family up to get Bella what you wanted her to have.
Yeah. There are considerations. So and I have the study binder in front of me, and, you know, the letter that we had to sign, it tells, you know, all the commitment, and, you know, they're very clear that you could be on a placebo. You know, there are all these side effects, and that's what they need to do. They're doing scientific research. So, you know, good on them for having all the documents in front of us. But they talked about 35 extra research visits. So the trial that we live in Northern New Jersey, the trial was in CHOP in Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. It's a drive for us. We both work. We had to figure, you know, that process out. Every time we go, we had to get blood tests and urine tests. She had to be 12 separate days, 6 months or a year apart, getting daily infusions. We had to stay in Philly for those 12 days. So that's disruption in education. She had to do the mixed meal tolerance test 5 times, which, if anyone's done it, it takes a toll on you, because from 10 o'clock at night till the time you take the MMTT, you can't eat. You can't be too high. You can't be too low. Imagine doing that as a newly diagnosed type 1. So we knew that. I think there are risks in life in everything you do. You know, you can ride a bike and things can happen. And as a type 1, you very quickly learn life is about planning. So we planned. And what we tried to do is, the first 12-day infusion we did during spring break, so it wasn't disruptive to her. And the CHOP team was, you know, incredibly accommodating. There are not a lot of high schoolers who do this, largely for the reasons you've mentioned. So be accommodated around that. We would do the trips, the 35 trips there on Fridays. So it was not too disruptive on the school schedule. We stayed in Philadelphia. So they paid for the hotel room and we stayed there. And thanks to hybrid learning, she could do the schoolwork. Her academics were affected the second time around, because she was in the throes of freshman year of high school. But, you know, she's not getting her PhD and, you know, doing research on cancer. It's freshman in high school. You can't have perspective. I think there are considerations. I think every family needs to make those decisions. But to us, I think one of the biggest, other than being and quite frankly, so excited that it got approved, one of the biggest outcomes and benefits was that Bela got to spend time with the best minds in clinical research and type 1 diabetes. You know, she would sit there and we typically would take a step back and she'd ask all kinds of questions, you know, and good on her. And I think the more kids, I say children, can advocate for themselves and ask those questions, be vulnerable, talk about their lives with diabetes, as opposed to having an endo visit, which is just a chore. I think it made it interesting, and we made the Philly trip super interesting. So her father went to college there, so we would go to all his hangouts and we would do trips there. We bring the younger daughter there. So we try to sort of bookend those were hard visits. But we bookended them with fun, and we talked a lot about her journey and what she's experiencing. And yeah, so it's, I recommend it to anyone who can get the opportunity to participate in research. It is profoundly valuable to do that. Yes, it's demanding, but life as a type one is demanding, period. So it's a burden, but you can plan around it is my view.
Well, yeah, wow. That's great to hear. And thank you. I mean, we need people to do research. Otherwise, we would never have advances. Speaking of that, you know, it's really exciting, right, that teplizumab is approved now for the delay of the onset of type 1 diabetes. So kind of curious, I know you've been in the midst of this other clinical trial with it when you got this news, but kind of what you think about that and kind of other research developments related to this.
You know what? The first thing I did, of course, I congratulated the group, the CHOP team. You know, they're the ones who are doing the hard work, right? And the patients. But the first thing I did was I went back on clinicaltrials.gov to see what are other research. And sadly, right now there is no drug that's being researched. So my hope is that this should open up more investment in type 1, both research and drug approvals. I think my hope is that people like me and others who participate talk about, you know, we did something, it resulted in something. The odds are slim, but unless you do participate in research, you know, nothing sort of happens. So we're having those conversations. I'll tell you a little personal story. I was at a dinner with fellow parents and we were talking about participating in clinical trials and such. And of course I advocated for it. And one of the parents whose child had been diagnosed for a long time, you know, said they had the opportunity to participate and they chose not to. And another parent said, well, what if it doesn't get approved? And what do I tell someone whose child has been diagnosed? So there were lots of what ifs. And you know, my view is let's be part of the answer to the what ifs on those. I don't even know if Bela got the drug. We won't know till I think later this year. And that's okay. Quite frankly, we don't want to know, although my parents keep asking. she's super happy that she did this and she talks about it and that gives me joy.
So I have a question about you. You have mentioned that a couple of times now that you have another child. Have you screened your other child?
First thing we did. We screened her, we screened ourselves, both of us. And yeah, it's a worry about, we try not to talk about it, but we did screen. All three of us screened with trial net.
Excellent. I'm a big believer in trial net. I think that it's important for us to know. But we do have people with diabetes who say, I don't want to know if my child is going to get diabetes. I'll know. You know, it's a very different thought process and we need to respect everyone, right? As clinicians, as people, learning to open up in the world and talk about our differences and our similarities. But I'm a huge believer in let's see what we can do as opposed to not. Yeah.
No, we did it because we were in the midst of, my younger daughter's Pia and Bela's. For the first 4 weeks, you know, you don't know your left hand from your right hand. You're doing math and we have binders and you're trying to be really precise. And I think for us, food, I mean, we're Indian family. So food is like our love language. So everything is around cooking and, you know, try cooking Indian food with a precise recipe and calculating carbs. It's not going to happen. So I spent a lot of time initially on just the food part of our life because that's a big part of our life. But once we got through some of that, or at least we could see some light on the horizon that we'll figure this out. I think by week 5, we had all tested. We'd got the TrialNet kit and we had done the testing. And the timing of that was important because at the same time, we were also in discussions with CHOP about the clinical trial. And what I was connecting the dots on is, A, I would not want my second child to go through what Bela went through. That was 6 months of hell. And she kept telling us, we just didn't connect the dots that this was type 1 diabetes. So I wouldn't want Pia to go through that. And if she knew and if teplizumab did get approved, then there would be something we could do about it. We could give her something to before. So, you know, I suppose knowing is, and being informed consumer, if you like, is better. But yeah, I get the point of view that you'd rather not know and enjoy your life and be happy until the inevitable happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the approval of this drug, at least we hope there will be a lot more screening happening. And kind of speaking about that, I'm curious what advice you might have for physicians or others in diagnosing or managing people that have type 1 diabetes or, you know, screening and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you start with a pediatrician, actually, because all of this, most of the diagnosis are happening at that level. And then you bring the specialist. And I can't say this enough. I happen to sit now on the JDRF local chapter board. And, you know, I'm always talking about pediatric education, like a pediatrician education, if you like. They have to talk about this. It's life-changing, right? Just like Crohn's disease and all these autoimmune disorders. And screening for those, let's just do that. If we had done that, we may have taken a different path towards Bela's care. So to me, that's number one. I think my sort of other passion, I have three passion points. One is screen, have the pediatricians talk. You know, you can't do that enough. It's such a, teachable moment, if you like, for families. I think the other is nutrition, the nutritional education to make it culturally contextual. So all the information we got when we left the hospital that's just not the food we cook. So that was, had to be self-directed, and not a lot of families have the time or the means to be self-directed. And connecting me to someone of my background who understood how I could cook my food differently would have been so valuable, would have saved a lot of heartache in the initial move. I think the third thing is much more sort of on the science side of it is there still continues to be very little representation of people of color in clinical trials. And having that is hugely important because everyone's physiology is different. We react. So teplizumab, we don't know if Bela took it, but it likely will act differently for my genetic code than your genetic code, if you like. So again, if we all want to benefit from it, we all need to participate in it. And, you know, I want to see all colors, if you like, represented in these studies.
Wow. Yeah. What a wonderful discussion.
Yeah.
We've learned so much today from you. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I think people really value everything that you've shared today.
I appreciate the opportunity. If I can help in any way, it will be a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I think when we think about a family that gets diagnosed with diabetes with no history of type 1 diabetes in their family, we forget as clinicians how difficult that can be. And to hear her words talking about the struggles that they had, and they're looking for answers for this child that was eating excessively, that was sick, that fell asleep at school, was just heart-wrenching.
Right. And some of what came across is, you know, feeling like, oh, they should have been able to recognize the signs, but how are you supposed to know? I mean, there's so many different conditions out there, and you never think, if you have no family history of it, you never think like, my child will develop type 1 diabetes.
Right. I mean, I really do. I could hear her pain in the discussion, right? Just that parent guilt, you know? But it also, I think, is very interesting how quickly they turned around, because in the trial that they're in, they had to make a decision within the first 6 weeks of diagnosis. And you and I both know patients, families that are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, the first 6 weeks is a complete blur. You don't know your own name. You look at food differently, and you really are struggling. She has to go back to school. There were a lot of challenges that they had to overcome in order to make a decision to get into to enroll themselves in a trial hours from their home.
I know. I'm amazed that they just had the wherewithal to say, oh, wait, let me look for a clinical trial to find one. Because you're right. Those first few weeks, you're just trying to navigate how to check blood sugars and taking insulin shots and figuring out new technology and right, the eating. And so it is so much to take in. And so it's hard. I mean, most people don't think to seek out a clinical trial like that.
And what she did mention was going to something called clinicaltrials.gov, where you can search for trials, all kinds of different medical trials in the United States. If you're looking specifically for type 1 trials, you can go to the JDRF website, jdrf.org, and they have trials specific. They have a site that is specific to look at trials for patients newly diagnosed, patients who have had diabetes, type 1 diabetes for long periods of time. And you can do it based on how far away you want to do from your house and all kinds of different other parameters. And you can put those in and it will pull up what's available. So I think people don't know about those, though, especially the day they're diagnosed. What do you do? This family was very educated and it helped them get to where they needed to be very quickly.
Right. And I couldn't help but think if we do start doing more global screening that, you know, situations like this, we could catch a little bit earlier and it would give people more time. I mean, a lot of people, unfortunately, are diagnosed when it gets to be really acute in diabetes ketoacidosis or DKA. And if we can screen and recognize it earlier, it would allow everyone more time to process it. And, you know, in theory, also contribute more to getting more people enrolled in clinical trials and doing more research.
And we do, I believe in my heart that if we can avoid the DKA, we can also preserve that islet cell function. And I think that's a big part of all that. We'd love that for every patient. I never want another patient diagnosed in DKA. I want them all diagnosed in a routine screening versus full-blown blood sugar 900 ICU. That's a horrific way to go.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, of course, we see a lot of cases diagnosed in kids, but I work with adults and we see a lot of LADA or Latin autoimmune diabetes of adults. And so it's like a slower progressing, you know, type 1 diabetes. But the problem is a lot of people are misdiagnosed for type 2 diabetes. They don't get their autoantibodies checked. It's just assumed they have type 2 diabetes. And that, unfortunately, it can lead to a lot of frustration because the typical drugs are just not working. But unfortunately, if someone becomes acutely ill, also we can see cases where people then go into DKA yes. and get hospitalized. And so it contributes to worse outcomes by not having this information, checking for those autoantibodies.
Right. I agree. I think there's going to be a big curve in educating screening now, because there's something we can do. In the past, there was nothing to do, so we didn't screen. I mean, it was always this, you know, the NIH-funded DPT trial. But other than that, we didn't screen people. So if your child got diagnosed with type 1, we'd screen your children if you'd like us to, or you guys, you and your husband. But now we have something we can act upon. And this family chose to act upon that, which I think is an amazing.
It really is so amazing. And so in my head, what I'm thinking is, how can we get this information to more people? Because this was like a very well-educated, like really motivated right. family, it sounds like. And we know people have all kinds of barriers and obstacles that make finding this information difficult. And even for them, it was still difficult to find and get enrolled in the trial and everything. So I'm hoping screening will increase awareness, but I'm also thinking in my head, like, what else can we do to really increase knowledge of diabetes, and who do we screen? Like, do we screen people maybe that have family histories of autoimmune conditions? Because we know, like in her family, she was the first one with type 1 diabetes. So how was that even supposed to be right. on their radar?
But she wasn't the first one with an autoimmune disease, right?
Right?
So
right.
do we start there? I mean, obviously in the diabetes prevention trial, we started with relatives of someone with type 1, because those people have the highest risk. But then where do we go from there? Because most often you don't have someone else in your family, but do you have is there an autoimmune disease? And should we start with those people? My gut says absolutely that's where we start.
Right. I think that would make a lot of sense.
So one thing that I think we should bring up is that there have been several studies using teplizumab. And there have been studies using, and what it's approved for today is a 14-day infusion. There are ongoing studies that uses a 12-day infusion. And we're going to talk about this more in other episodes. But one of the reasons is they're trying to make it as easy for patients to get the infusion in as possible. And saying it's only one weekend, I think, is going to help with that.
Right. So yeah, that's an important clarification, right? The FDA approval is the 14 days,
yes.
But in this specific trial that Bela was enrolled in, it's a 12-day infusion. And we may see different versions of this going forward in the future, but for now, it's the full 14 days. I also just wanted to stress, we know education on this topic is really important for physicians and for other healthcare professionals. Knowledge about, well, how to screen, the fact that there is an agent now that is FDA approved to help delay the progression from stage 2 to stage 3 type 1 diabetes, and that it's being studied for other, you know, other forms of type 1 diabetes. So definitely a lot of work to keep everyone educated.
Absolutely.
And I think even, you know, especially in primary care or in pediatrics, that everyone's really knowledgeable about all these different symptoms that can occur, so that if there's even a hunch, like someone's more thirsty, they're losing weight, they're hungrier, feeling fatigued, that we don't hesitate, that we check. We check glucose levels, or we check A1Cs, or we check autoantibodies so that we can provide the best care and prevent any, you know, acute complications like DKA whenever possible.
And I think the challenge for the education part for all healthcare professionals is we all are going to start thinking, is this really my job? That's not my patient. I practice endocrinology. The patients without diabetes don't have diabetes. They're not coming to me to get this screening. But I do believe that it is my job to inform my patients with type 1 diabetes that there is a drug now available to delay the onset for their family members, and that they deserve that education. And then they can decide what to do with it from there. They can take handouts and go to their pediatrician or go to their primary care provider and ask and seek their own care at that point.
Well, thank you for this great discussion. And thanks to our audience for tuning in. If you enjoyed the content, please subscribe to our e-newsletters to receive upcoming MedCast episodes and other great content in your inbox.